You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic, otherwise known as your host here, Lance White. Before I introduce tonight's guest, I have a brief public service announcement. Yesterday, my Yahoo, Facebook, and blog passwords were phished, meaning stolen, and the hacker used instant messaging to contact all of my friends to ask for money, claiming to be me stuck in London. Unfortunately, a friend of mine on Facebook fell for the scam and wired $500 to the perpetrator. All of my account passwords were changed, so I have no access to any of my accounts at Yahoo or Facebook or on my blog. This can happen to anyone, so I recommend that those who are wise don't send money to people on the internet, especially anybody that claims to be a friend of yours. It could be a stolen identity. Also, don't do what I did and use the same password for all of your accounts. I've been using the same password for 10 years now, and I knew that someday it could blow up on me. Well, yesterday was the day. So I advise changing your password monthly and keep a list of them offline. Use a mix of numbers, caps, and lowercase. The longer and more complex, the better. People are getting into bank accounts and cleaning them out. So that said, you have all been duly warned. Okay, tonight I'm delighted to welcome Cliff High back for a special Halloween show. He doesn't really need an introduction, but for the one person listening who may not know, Cliff is best known for his work with the WebBot project at Half Past Human, and I believe that's www.halfpasthuman.com. You can correct me if that's wrong. First established to assist in analyzing market trends, it was soon noticed that other trends were beginning to reveal themselves in the nature of future events, which had been revealed through linguistic models. The WebBot project began and was affectionately referred to as the Rickety Time Machine. Cliff has been a guest on numerous shows recently, including Coast to Coast, Jeff Rentz, and American Radio. So let's welcome him back to the show tonight, and happy Halloween, Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing just fine.
Well, it's your turn to talk. I've done my talking now.
Yeah, well, there you go. The website is correct. No problem there. And it's it's sort of strange to be here in a Halloween night doing this sort of thing. But hopefully we can provide enough scaries. I've got skeletons on halfpasthuman.com every day of the year. So get you in the mood for it.
And I put a special skeleton up on the bio. So, you know, if that doesn't scare people away, I don't know what will. The first thing that most people are probably going to want me to ask is there was supposed to be an October surprise. How did that turn out?
There was supposed to be an October turn of language.
Turn.
Indeed has been one,
okay.
And it reflects the change of events in this past week. If you just looked at the news following international crises in Afghanistan or the markets or any of that, you'll notice that all of the language being used in general refers to something that is stomach-grabbing in the sense of building tension language, so we were
mm-hmm.
quite correct about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sadly, but apparently quite accurate, and it began with the swine flu pandemic announcement in the U.S., you know, state of emergency, hospitals starting to be moved under government control. And then the next day we had the filing of bankruptcy of the largest commercial real estate lender that was operating in the U.S. And that one was also tied to GMAC, something that should not go unnoticed.
Interesting. Well, that was one of my questions, which I hadn't, which is a couple of questions down, is has the commercial real estate bubble begun to burst yet, which I believe you mentioned in the last report.
Yes, and it's going to fail, and it's going to fail very rapidly, because unlike the home situation, repossession is not normally an issue. The you have to understand that a great deal of the soon-to-be bankrupt asset or worthless asset of commercial real estate is empty. And so there's no issue in terms of repossession. There's very little in the way of a social impetus to keep it in anybody's hands in particular. So people can go bankrupt quite rapidly in that business. As we've seen, for instance, in the side failures of the Snell crisis of last century here in the Southwest and Southeast U.S.
Another interesting thing, I was reviewing the latest report that I received from you, and you're absolutely right on this one. I mean, you just spell it out in black and white. I've noticed that the chemtrails are showing up without the planes being obvious, and I reviewed the WebBot report, and it mentions that not only are they going to not be obvious, but they're going to increase in volume.
And that apparently is the case. We're seeing much more in the way of manifesting language on the net about that. People complaining that, you know, their areas were especially hard hit this past summer.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, this has been going on for a good 10 years or longer.
With various levels of cover stories, correct.
Right, right. And as we know, it's not on the major news networks because they're controlled. And we only get probably, I don't know, we get minimal information, if anything. I'd say most of the news is disinformation at this point.
Well, it's 100% propaganda. That's their function is to lie for the establishment, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
And they do their job very well. Look how many people are confused.
Absolutely. And if you're not confused enough, you can watch the commercials in between.
There you go.
Mind numb.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So, yeah. It's been mentioned that people are afraid that let's get back to the swine flu because you brought that up. I have done enough research on this that to satisfy my own curiosity, and I believe that that was engineered, as are most horrific diseases, and the powers that be usually have the antidote or the some method of avoiding being infected with their own
with their own
creation.
Weapons, basically, yeah.
Right, their weapons. Yeah. I mean, basically, it seems as if the politics, the politicians, the military has turned on us, and we are now the enemy. Americans are the enemy of our own government that we're paying for.
Yeah, I don't think that they actually would award us that status. I think they see us more in the lines of sheep or cattle in the sense of a giant, large mass that they can do with as they will. Because the enemy, the concept of an enemy, bear in mind you're talking to a radical linguist here, implies at least a certain amount of respect that that person or organization or whatever could do you harm. I don't think that they suspect that that is the case. And they treat us very much like cattle. It's like, oh, let's try this particular product or whatever. But bear in mind, they've been doing this since the 60s, so this is nothing new. And the fact that they got away with it in the 60s and 70s led to the attitude that has produced chemtrails and all this other stuff today.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, starting with 1947 and Area 51, most of the projects that the corporations have been working on secretly all went black.
Yes.
And fund those. My understanding is that the elder Bush was the one that began the running of the drug trade from the cartels through one of the oil wells. They would load them up off the oil well.
The platforms.
Platforms.
Yeah.
And then they'd use that drug money to fund black operations.
Right.
In fact, one of my guests who you mentioned in your recent report, Andrew D. Bajago, was part of a project in the 60s called Pegasus, and he said that the project controller was, of all people, Donald Rumsfeld.
Well, who was also, of course, the head of marketing and other nefarious activities for Cerol, and he's responsible for aspartame being rammed through the Let's Make a Safe Product committees for the FDA, and which set off that whole level of neurotoxin, and they make a fortune on that because there's all the medicines to treat the associated problems. So
it's
quite complex, but nonetheless, that pretty much is how I understand it as well.
Yeah, it's just so strange to live in a world of such great duality, where everything that we see is designed to improve life and, you know, eat these vitamins and go to this gym and do this and do that. And underneath it all, there's this dark agenda that goes way back to the shadow government and, you know, the power.
Or you can trace it all the way back to John Dee, the original 007 agent for the Queen of England in the 1500s or earlier. You can trace it back to Pope Gregory ordering the faked destruction of the Mayan codices when they were smuggled back to the Vatican. And they were used to, you know, alter the calendar. There's all kinds of weird plots going on with these people. And it's very odd indeed. Getting back to the idea that we're their enemy just for an instant.
Yes.
Our data actually shows that that is the case, and that they realize that, and that. But they don't see us as enemies, as individuals. They see the herd breaking from their control as enemy, because it, in essence, would be a stampede, an overwhelming force, and that I think they're very much afraid of. What they're afraid of it is a, within the language we can see, is a secondary kind of a thing. Some of the stuff coming out of Graham House or the Council on Foreign Relations here in the U.S. seems to imply through our archetype resolution process that their fear of the masses rising in a general political awakening is right up there, but that there's something greater than that that they're a little bit weirded out by. Nonetheless, their most immediate fear is revolution. And anytime you see the words used anywhere near politicians, the blood drains right out of them and their eyes go very narrow.
Well, they're pretty bloodless. And
oh, well, to begin anyway. With, you're right.
So it's hard to tell when the blood drains out of them. They're all such vampires.
You're right. Perfect for the season, of course, yeah.
Of course. Well, you know, another obvious truth to me and to so many people that are waking up around the globe is that free energy technology has existed for over 50 years, as has advanced travel and a second space program that we know very little about, except that it can go to any planets and it might have interdimensional capabilities. Is there any hint in the bots of this coming out in the open at any point, because there's so much pressure from various exopolitics groups on the president? I believe Stephen Greer wrote the president and...
Yeah, we don't. We have some support for the. Well, we certainly have all kinds of support for the idea of the pressure being placed on politicians. We don't have any support for the politicians, quote, caving in and responding to that pressure in an affirmative way. We do have support for the information coming out, but only in the chaos of much larger events. So it's very much like revolution sweeping through France in the 1700s, 300,000 people get killed. And oh, by the way, of that 300,000, there were like 15 or 20 really key players that were taken out, which set back Vatican moves for, you know, almost a century. But you don't know it for until the whole drama has played out in almost 80 years after their revolution. We're going to be faced with something in a much more compressed time, but the data would suggest that in the chaos of other events, information will be released, but its propagation thereafter is not necessarily guaranteed to be as swift or available as we have now. In other words, the chaos of the circumstances will indeed also affect the ability for that communication to get out.
That makes total sense to me. In other words, the chaos of these larger events, which I interpret to be the powers that be pulling the rug out of the dollar in America, and the real estate bubble bursting, and you probably...
Oh, and global food riots, and food riots here in the U.S., and food
oil
riots.
Oil going up to sky high, so people can't truck anything around. And
correct.
Shortages.
Energy shortages, and spotty electricity, so on, right. And see, that'll be part of the problem. Of course, we require electricity to, you know, front the Internet.
And there's
also a few key players in the telephone world that basically run the trunk upon which the Internet is based.
Wow.
And they will also be affected by circumstances beyond everyone's control. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, at some point, the ability of the infrastructure to respond to this will break down, and there simply won't be the ability to have repairs. So, for instance, there may be an undersea quake just as the dollar has reached terrible levels, and the repairs become astronomical to make, and the nominal ownership might be an American firm that's suffering all different kinds of problems, and therefore the repairs simply won't get done.
There's, again, we agree that the news, quote unquote, on the on anything televised, pretty much, and even most of the internet, is controlled, and it's disinformation and it's brainwashing. What was I going to ask you now? Yes, about the economy. Everybody's, you know, saying, well, the economy is turning around and this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah. They used to have songs about that. Happy days are here again. Pardon my terrible singing. It's the same meme, though, recurring. Yeah, sure, you can believe in green shoots.
Yeah.
They'll never mature into a plant, and you'll be, you know, grazing off of them like a cow, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, it just seems that what you're saying is that this collapse is imminent.
It's underway. It's not imminent. It's actually happening now. The single largest lender for the largest commercial real estate market on the planet has just declared bankruptcy. As I understand it, tomorrow, Citibank may file bankruptcy.
Wow.
That's the largest single bank in the U.S. And, oh, by the way, there's a whole lot of rumor to support the idea that Citibank was more or less taken over by the Fed when it really failed back in 1999 and 2000, when it underwent problems in the internet bubble collapse, and then it's been more or less a zombie bank since then. And what's going on is something even much worse than we might all imagine, and that is the Fed's trying to cut the deadwood to survive, knowing full well that they can't survive, but it'll be a situation that you have to look at it in a kind of a strange way. We are consumers of a product from the powers that be. That product has been a relatively stable currency system, and the product is known to us by a brand that we call dollar. And the brand is dying. It's been tainted, and confusion and empire collapse will result every bit as surely as when the Roman powers that be diluted the silver and gold currency of the time with the introduction of base metals through basically counterfeiting their own currency. The confidence collapse caused the empire to fade very rapidly, and it'll happen much more rapidly here simply because of the mass communications.
Right, and of course, during the last bank failures, which just ironically happened coincidentally along with the Mayan calendar's fifth night, just prior to the sixth day, which we're leaving now for the sixth night. I don't know if you pay any attention to that stuff. But
yeah, actually, I find it very, very cool. I love it when all this astrology stuff intersects our stuff or comes close. Yeah,
and it does seem to all kind of line up.
And there's some kind of big astrology thing that these astro guys are telling me for November 8th and 9th. Our data seems to suggest the 5th is the more potent day, but yeah.
It does feel as if, for many people that I know, that the tension has been building, and yet nothing has happened. I mean, we can see there's a few things happening. There's, you know, as you said, there have been some shifts. There's some war maneuvering. There's this and that. But, I mean, talking about world-changing, paradigm-shifting events, it's all pretty much being wallpapered over right now, don't you think?
I do indeed. But of course, that's the issue of a controlled propaganda media, and it's the same kind of thing that the people in the Soviet Union lived in for 20, 30 years, where their media was 100% devoted to only one function, as is ours, and that's propping up the establishment at any and all costs, including lies and fraud.
Yep. And in fact, it seems like. I hate to say this, but it seems like the White House, and this probably is blasphemy, is really just kind of a dog and pony show for cops and robbers, and it's just a money laundering operation, basically.
All the way through, I would agree with that as a factual statement, that there's really no reason to vote anymore. They'll quite handily choose who they want anyway, and voting simply encourages them. And by the way, you know the White House isn't in charge. and probably will never do the disclosure thing because they're so far down on the security clearance. There's
what
the, you know, the, let's talk about archetypes for a second. There was a prototypical conversation that occurred from, with Jimmy Carter when he became president. Bear in mind, Jimmy Carter was a nuclear sub commander and he'd seen UFOs in the course of being a nuclear sub guy. And, you know, he had high security clearance and so on. And he goes in and he becomes president. And then he says, okay, let's release info. I want to know what's going on here. And the head of his CIA said to him flat out, you know, Mr. President, you don't have a high enough security clearance for me to discuss this with you. And, of course, who was the head of his CIA security at the time but George Bush Sr., George Bush 41, and who flat out told him that the president doesn't have a high enough security clearance. So they're never going to do the disclosure from that particular viewpoint, I think. If it happens, it'll be as part of a generalized coup against the shadow government.
Yes, and of course, according to whistleblowers that are seem to be in the know, there are 47 levels above the president's.
I wouldn't doubt it a bit. And, you know, beyond just saying, okay, he's not the highest, any number picked out is simply monkey mind speculation and meaning.
Right, right.
Who cares? 27, 12, you know,
right.
2, it just does not matter.
Right.
He has a boss that, to whom he must, you know, kiss butt and
right.
respond.
Exactly. Exactly. It's, a lot of people are concerned about the New World Order and, you know, the Cheney and the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilaterals and the Bilderbergs and so on and so
right.
forth. In fact, my dad, when I was a little kid, told me that money was worthless and that the Bilderbergs owned everything. And I remember, he used to say that all the time when he'd get drunk.
And,
now you
discover he's not wrong.
Yeah, he knew. And he lived through the Great Depression,
right.
which was another one of those manufactured events by the powers that be.
Oh, it's terrible, terrible. You know, Prescott Bush supports and bankrolls Hitler and then is made a senator. And it's like, oh, no, this is the interconnection of all of this going back into these skull and bones guys. It's just absurd. And we put up with this?
Yeah.
But that's okay. You know, circumstances are revealing themselves almost daily that indicate that this charade won't go on much longer. That the dog and pony show of the whole situation is going to change abruptly because we won't be able to afford the veneer overcoating. We'll have to just look at it all realistically.
That's going to be quite a shock for most people who don't know.
Well, it's going to be you know, essentially coincident with or the causal component to a generalized social breakdown. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, which seems to me like it has to happen before we can make any progress whatsoever. I mean, you know, until the old corrupt systems are exposed and crashing and down around their feet,
right?
You know, they're in control. You know, they own the world. They've got their handle on the pulse. And until we can see behind the Wizard of Oz's curtain, you know, who's pulling those levers, we have some ideas about it. But, you know, until we actually get some solid information and everybody knows the same thing, it seems like it's going to be almost impossible to...
Right. Well, we may get to that. We may end up with a revolutionary expression here in the U.S. that leads to show trials similar to what the Soviets had in the early part of the Bolshevik Revolution and beyond. Now, they had radio broadcasts, but there's no reason that we wouldn't have television broadcasts of show trials as we put various individuals, or the Revolutionary Council, put various individuals on trial for crimes against humanity.
Hmm.
Basically, that's what occurs. And, you know, it's going to be a rather ugly situation because under such circumstances, really there's only one penalty for this, and that is that basically if you're run through the show trial, you won't be re-educated. You'll just kind of disappear somewhere.
Hmm.
The issue for us is going to be how strange our particular revolution is going to get or continue.
Hmm.
If you follow Gerald, what's his name, Colente?
Colente?
Salenti, yeah. If you follow his work, he's saying the second revolution, American Revolution, has already begun, and I agree with him that the revolutionary impulse is certainly manifesting. I would just say that it just sort of took a hiatus between the late 1700s and now, and that we still have business to finish, and we never really got the first one correct.
Right.
So we're going to have to revisit some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And the issue is, with so many people and so many diverse factions and, you know, the disenfranchised, just how strange will it become? By that I also mean how violent. because we're getting to a situation where, you know, the disenfranchised meth addict and then urban environment has more in common with the disenfranchised middle class who've been kicked out of their houses and are now trying to find shelter under freeways than those middle class do with their supposed political leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So it's under such circumstances and with the gap between haves and have-nots never having reached these proportions, it looks like this is all quite inevitable.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, and one of the things about this New World Order is that, you know, somebody mentioned something to me that that hadn't crossed my mind. We're also, so many people are afraid that it's going to happen. He says, it's already happened.
Yes, it's a long, slow process.
Yeah,
everybody wakes up to it at a different time, and they're either anticipatory or they gain insight that it's already occurring, and it's a question of shoving this. There was great science fiction writer by the name of Isaac Asimov. He wrote a series of books in the 50s called the Foundation Trilogy.
Oh, I loved them.
Right. Within the Foundation Trilogy was this particular character, I think his name was like Harry Sheldon or something, and he had invented this psycho-social historical analysis.
Yes.
Okay. In his world, in the world in which Isaac Asimov postulated this character, stuck way out in the far reaches of a great galactic empire, they charted everything in the course of centuries.
Yeah.
And basically what they were doing at a fundamental level, our stuff has been compared to it rather favorably, and I kind of like that. But basically what they were doing was they were watching large social trends emerge, and they would plot this, of course, across thousands of planets and, of course, you know, tons of billions of beings, and it would take, you know, centuries to occur. What we're actually kind of doing is seeing at the moment that sort of a view of history emerge around us. If you take a little step back, you can see these larger trends develop that we're all part of, unfortunately, and that we all have to swim through, but they're emerging in a space that's staggeringly brief, and it's just rather a shock as to how it comes out. And now I take heed of all of the literature about the revolutionary period here in the U.S. and in the French Revolution, especially, of the 1700s, late 1700s, because in both cases they say that, you know, events were agonizingly slow to unfold until all of a sudden it was on and everybody was hip deep in blood. Mm-hmm. And it just emerged and erupted in a magnificent chaos in a very short period of time once it reached this critical point. And I think we're getting close to that kind of stuff. Our data would suggest that some kind of arc or major point of unsettlement awaits us in the early part of 2010 that will tip us into a much more active version of revolution.
Interesting. And also, there's in 2010, there's mention of possible tidal overflowing. We know that the ice is melting in both places, on the top and bottom of the ball.
Yeah.
And, you know, in fact, I had the strange feeling that one of those ice packs was cut with a laser, because there was a picture of it a while back. And it was
rectangular.
Yeah. And I thought, well, that's got to be a laser device from the sky. You know, they have them. They have anything you can imagine.
Yeah, but I would presuppose that you needn't go that far to see this come out, because you're dealing with a crystalline structure anyway.
That's right.
And crystals have a tendency to fracture along the platonic solids, so rectilinear shapes are to be expected. And a level of precision, you don't find rectilinear shapes more precise than are made by nature in the form of crystals. So,
true.
You know,
and they are perfect, supposedly.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I've collected crystals and little bits and pieces of rock, and you can see just how precise they are.
Yeah, they really are.
Yeah.
Now, what about, how do you
think... But before we move on, let's also note that the Australian government recently has put out this series of documents and studies and so forth about how it's not safe for Australian citizens to live around the coast because of the potential for sudden or rapid ocean level rises.
Oh.
What they're defining that as is rather low, but their level of fear is quite solid and would suggest that they're afraid of something much larger than the 11 or 12 centimeters they're forecasting.
Wow. And, of course, we know, we have information that the government is moving everything, all of its underground bases and operations to, I think it's the 33rd degree above the latitude.
Yes, I know. They're really fond of these number combinations. You know, 19.447 is a prime number within their system. 33 is all the permutations in terms of, you know, sines and cosines of 19.47, such as 38 and 39 also have a place of honor. And they get really whipped up by all of this. But, of course, to a certain extent, there's a real reason for it, because within universe, these are actually very key understandings that are required.
Yeah, yeah.
And they represent hyperdimensional reality, or hyperdimensional metaphysical underpinning to reality. Just recently,
right,
there was these articles that came out that linked dark matter with the creation of the suns and all of this. And it's like, well, there was, you know, several hundred thousands of dollars to produce a well-duh moment. Everybody should understand that that's the case, because the universe is basically made of tetrahedrons, which is the smallest possible shape that can exist and meet all of the criteria that universe requires. A really good discussion of it can be found in Synergetics in like the first four chapter of Buckminster Fuller's work, and he goes on to describe how universe has to be constructed. And lo and behold, you know, years later, we discovered that indeed this is the case, and the hyperdimensional realities are in fact used by NASA and all the other science, and even all of the shadow government, and they rely on it. And key components of those are embraced in these numeric codings of 33 and other significant numbers.
Yeah, and that's true. And another interesting thing is that they use a lot of esoteric numerology and astrology as well. They're quite adept at that, probably because some of the people who are at the top of the ladder are beyond the 33rd degree of Masonry or whatever, Rosicrucian, whatever.
No, if you're talking 33rd degree, to be accurate, you'd have to say in the U.S. that would be the Scottish Rite. Anything above the third degree, you're not technically a Mason. You have to be invited to pass out of the standard Mason lodge from which they recruit into what's known as the Scottish Rite.
Ah.
And then you go on to the upper echelon, and theoretically there's 13 degrees beyond the 33rd degree in the Scottish Rite. But the transition between the 32nd and 33rd degree is reputed to be quite tough.
Yeah.
For many different reasons. But on the other hand, your statement is quite accurate, and these people take this numerology very seriously because they understand how the hyperdimensional nature of universe actually manifests, and that these numbers can be meaningful in that way. So, as an instance, the Hawaii is at 19.47 degrees of latitude because of the nature of the hyperdimensional structure of a planet Earth. The red spots on the giant gas giants that are the perpetual storms are at 19.47 degrees latitude because of that same structure. Sunspots form in the sun at 19.47 degrees because of the internal hyperdimensional structure. Once you get all of this math down, then it becomes almost it is a form of very intense symbolism that can convey vast quantities of information in a relatively short period of time. So, for instance, the powers that be are real hyped on the number 11 and the number 9. Number 11, of course, is significant because it's the length of the sunspot cycle. It's also a key number in the formation of all different kinds of other numbers numerologically, and it is referenced as being one number past divinity, which was described as being the number 10. 9 is of special interest to him numerologically because it is the number before divinity, but it's also seen as the number of completion or ascension. And it goes on and on and on, but a lot of these things ultimately come back to the Platonic solids and the shapes that are actually manifest in universe. And basically these shapes can be seen in the periodic table, but they exist in all these different intervening layers, and the whole idea of the free energy and that kind of stuff is controlled by that numerological code.
Huh, interesting. Well, you do believe, don't you, that the free energy has been around for decades and just simply kept under wraps?
It would make sense. I don't have any personal solid evidence of that, but there sure is enough linguistically to make one assume that, or take that as an operating assumption for making other conclusions. And when you do that, you find that a lot of these conclusions are in fact interwoven, and the world sharpens its picture for you. For instance, a lot of the movements of the powers that be make no sense if you take UFOs and aliens out of the picture. If you put them back in, aha, all of a sudden, yes, okay, this stuff does make sense.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of those kind of extractions. I don't have any personal evidence for it, but yes, I'm operating under the assumption that since 1956, there's been a, you know, basically a functional form of anti-gravity or / free energy available at the shadow world level.
Yep, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. I agree with that totally. Now, some people are talking about the possibility of one way that the powers that be, one of the little games that they could play on us, is a possible space war using holographic technology. And, you know, with the winners, of course, being the heroes, and then they introduce us to our new masters, the Anunnaki, or whoever it is that they've got in under wraps. Is there anything in the language that comes around 2010, 2011 that would support...
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, I have to agree that you could read a lot of the stuff that's in our Alien Wars subset of the Space Goat Farts entity. You could read it that way. It could be taken as support. Now, bear in mind that when we get down to the detail level of the aspect and attribute sets, we're at a level where there might be 20,000 such opportunities for me to choose, and so I might choose some that are highly attractive to, you know, my personal predisposition towards space aliens, and miss others that, you know, would be more bland to me.
Yeah. Interesting.
But you are correct. We do have some information that under the Alien War subset that would support a scenario that way. Could also be interpreted many other ways, but it certainly is one.
That's one of the ways it could be, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I would also suppose, by the way, that if they were to go and do that kind of thing, since we see how sophisticated they are in doing chemtrails, probably
right.
The holograms wouldn't be necessary. They probably have, you know, some kind of devices that they could actually go up and, you know, shoot at each other for a while.
Right, exactly. Yeah, but they have triangles and all kinds of devices that look just like, you know, they came from other places and probably were back-engineered.
Yeah, exactly so. Yeah, and I personally have seen something like that in 1972, which was, you know, a giant floaty thing that was silent, blocked out, you know, a considerable area, maybe a mile of the sky in the northwest before chemtrails, and, you know, went zipping off with no sound and scared, you know, scares the blood, the blood tries to crawl right out of your feet, yeah.
Very good. Well, we know with regards to food shortages that Monsanto and several other corporations and individuals have set up a food bank, the seed bank, not the food
The Doomsday Vault. Yeah.
Doomsday Vault. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, and you notice how high up in the latitudes they set it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very interesting, especially given that Monsanto has done everything in their power to destroy the natural cycles of plants and growing with the killer seeds and, you know, so on and so forth. And
by the way, that's also part of the continuing food crisis currently hitting India, which is so bad that India is having, as a nation, is having to repeal tax structures to try and encourage food imports.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a side effect of some of the GM crop issues of a couple of years back, yeah.
Yeah, doesn't the World Bank kind of loan the money and then they force the country to...
Evil little structure, yeah. The World Bank and the BIS. Well, all these people have, you know, karmic debts that they'll have to live out.
I sure hope so.
Well, we can be quite certain of that. I mean, I take that as, you know, a basic tenet of how a universe operates.
Yeah.
And, you know, the more scary nastiness you inflict, the more you're going to have to get retribution back. It's a zero-sum game, I think.
I think so, too. But, you know, so far, we're still living under the appearance or the illusion of that all being successful, and I think that
people take karma very simplistically. If you look at it from the sophisticated view of the Jain or some of the pre-Vedic Hindu descriptions, karma is actually a physical property. It's a super fine level of matter that is beyond our ability to perceive directly.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and if you look at the world as or the universe is composed of energetic pulses that are colliding with each other and provide the illusion of the solidity because they're happening so fast. At, you know, 22 trillion times a second, they're smashing into each other, and our brains work at maybe 30 frames a second. So for us, this is like solid stuff, right?
Right.
Okay, so if you look at it that way, karma is between this, like, 30 frames a second level of perception and the 22 trillion times a second impact. And now here's another side issue to it. There's this really brilliant fellow, now deceased, by the name of Ian Lundgold, I think.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
He did all kinds of stuff about the Mayan consciousness and all this kind of stuff. He's like Calamon. He has a different interpretation. He's really a smart fellow. But one of his enduring contributions to humans is this very short article he wrote that you can find online called The Game of Loss and Lack. And what he does is he describes a situation that tells you basically how karma works relative to this kind of stuff. In other words, why do bad guys prosper? Well, here's the deal. In universe, consciousness at one particular level is agnostic. It doesn't care good or bad. What it cares is an issue of what they call ethical risk. The more you put yourself out there as a subset of consciousness within this particular view of the game of loss and lack, the more you're generating, quote, excitement for other parts of consciousness to come your way, and it starts this like feedback loop. So the more you are bad, but do it in a particular mental mindset, the more your badness is accepted by universe, so to speak, and quote, rewarded, at least in the short run. Okay, ultimately we know, you know, you can only take that so far before everybody gets, in terms of the consciousness that's coming and accreting to you, gets really bored with this same old repetition thing. And Ian Lundgold's article goes to the point that really the way to approach this whole game of loss and lack is through the concept of taking ethical risk, which really puts you out there against your own better interests, but doing it for a positive viewpoint, and here's how you can gauge success and that this is all actually working for you. So, to a certain extent, this is a very good description of the karmic process that goes on at that particular level, and we're seeing that play out now. You'll note that the strain of all of the of that particular personality in that particular role was such that George Bush, once he was out, boy, he just dropped from sight. He's just nowhere to be seen. Mm. And he's like sort of decompressing from all of this because of that level of personal exposure and that accretion of vast quantities of karma. Mm-hmm. Now, in the Hindi and the Jain understanding of karma, which makes sense in an energetic view of the world, your consciousness becomes heavy, if you will, with these accumulated karmic particles that you have to shed, and they're at that level between 30 frames a second and 22 trillion times a second at which matter is actually created. And there, you have to go through some particular levels of process to get clean of them, and that's sort of the basic point of it all.
Mm. Well, that makes total sense to me. In fact, I was just writing a blog entry about it, that very subject. So except you said it much better than I did. I might go back and revise my little piece.
Well, before you do it, go and read Ian's article, because he said it far better than I could. He was very eloquent about it.
Yes, I just stumbled across a different article by him, and it was excellent. Now, and there's another weird event that I've heard you mention in the past, and that is in 2010, it appears that certain people literally walk into another dimension. And I think you mentioned Dick Cheney as one of those people.
No. If I did, it was just merely in passing and jokingly as potential candidate in my view, right?
Oh.
No. We don't do personalities, especially political personalities, for a lot of different reasons.
So I'm just imagining things.
You're wishful thinking, perhaps, yes.
Yeah, well, of course.
Yeah.
But did you mention anywhere in the web, I mean, it doesn't mention anywhere in the web bots that there will be some kind of disappearance of people.
This is a continuing meme, and we expect a flush of it, so to speak. But again, it'll be occurring in the period in which there will be a great deal of chaos. So it'll be perhaps difficult to determine exactly what's going on at any given point. with any level of surety from, say, the end of February onward, in the sense mm-hmm. that even the independent media might be breaking down. We just don't know what the issues are going to be relative to even Internet coverage as the economic problems become much worse over winter. Then there, as I say, there's the push towards a different expression of the revolutionary meme here in the U.S., which may bring, reach up to the point of a general strike, may bring a, you know, a strike against the IRS. I have no way of knowing, but it's going to be relatively massive yeah. over late spring and into summer. During that period of time, there is indeed this whole continuing disappearances sort of thing. I'm hoping it's not like the dirty war in Argentina where 30,000 innocent people were disappeared by the government.
Oh.
It appears that it's rather the other way, that if, but that fractional infighting as well as actual enemies rising up out of the giant crowd of the, you know, populace will indeed pressure the powers that be to the point where they'll get real paranoid and start walking around with lots of bodyguards. And I'm
yeah.
talking to the point where you see them in public, it'll be noticeable that they're surrounded by, you know, a dozen individuals, that sort of thing.
Wow. Now, I heard another rumor on the Internet that the World Bank was going bust, that they were getting broke. Now, is that even possible?
Sure. Actually, it's probable. It's predetermined. It must occur. And that's because the World Bank is really a creature of our Congress. It's not a World Bank, just as the Federal Reserve Bank is not part of the federal government, has no reserves, and is not really a bank. You know,
right.
So you have to understand, you know, the Department of Defense wages war. It does
right.
not defend against anything. The Department
right.
of Education does not do anything other than school. It does not educate.
Right.
The government's primary function is to lie to you. The media's total function is to support the establishment no
yeah.
matter what.
Yeah.
So they repeat the lies.
And then the FDA is just an arm of the pharmaceutical manufacturers
Correct.
Who present their own testing to the FDA and they rubber stamp it.
Yeah, and besides, you know, you see evidence of this when they're trying to figure a way to engineer out the placebo effect.
Yeah.
You know, so their tests will look a lot better. And it's like,
yeah.
whoa.
Jeez.
And their goal, but you're correct, the FDA's goal is to promote the profits of the pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah. Oh, it's all so corrupt. I mean, it just everywhere you look, there's nowhere you can look that it isn't. While we still have a few minutes, I'm just going to turn you loose, and what would you like to share with the listeners about what you know or feel or would like to talk about?
Boy, well, I mean, there's just so much.
Yeah.
I guess the thing to do is to look at everything from an entirely local perspective. You get up in the morning and you start your day with coffee. Okay, well,
right.
how soon will the coffee supplies last? As the mm-hmm. dollar degrades, what will you have to pay for that?
Mm-hmm.
You proceed on, you know, you're going to put salt on your breakfast. Well, okay, salt, et cetera. Start looking at all your commodities and seeing what you can effectively store and what you can't.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of these things are going to start disappearing or they're going to escalate in price. Especially those things that relate to food and energy.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing it in a fashion that is very similar to what happened to Rome when the Roman Empire collapsed. But because Rome didn't have instant communications and digital anything, their collapse took 50, 80 years, where ours will take maybe as little as 50, 80 days to
right.
go through these major
right.
hurdles.
Right.
And it will be magnified by the instant communications. So, for instance, we now know that there is, massive food problems on a famine scale for India, such
right.
that they've had to make major changes to their tax structure. Bear in mind, governments hate that. We'll do anything to avoid that.
Yeah.
So they are reacting. The fact that they're reacting this rapidly is another indication as to how bad it's going to be there. This is akin to the empire falling apart at the edges, which is how this always occurs. And it'll always go back to the rot at the center, and unfortunately that's where we all live. Now there's still
right.
some level of time
yeah.
to respond to circumstances and get yourself in a slightly better position to weather them, but there's no way to avoid them, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. It seems that the smart people, at least as far as I can tell, are, paying off their land or buying a piece of land that they can live on and grow some vegetables. And, in fact, I opened up a whole fact that the pine beetle had killed all the pine trees and they had to be taken down. So now I can grow my own vegetables because of global warming. The beetles just chomped them down until they were all just like kindling. And I hear that's going on all over America.
The forests are in terrible shape that way, yeah.
And the coral reefs, and then the dead...
Well, in the Pacific Northwest here, we've got the issue of the oysters aren't spawning for, you know, the fourth year in a row, but we're having a staggering response of salmon. It's like, you know, all of a sudden salmon has come back and crabs are coming back. However, both of those are actually benefiting from a short-term increase in the food supply at their particular levels due to the death of all kinds of other species within the ocean. So it's not a particularly a good situation. We have mass, twice the size of Texas out in the Pacific Ocean, of microfine plastic that's been accumulating and is starting to get into the food chain.
Oh, yeah. And then pharmaceuticals are getting into the water.
Yeah, yeah.
Not to mention, you know, there's the mercury problem. Which
then you go back to the glaciation or the lack thereof, and you know, the issues with Antarctica and so on.
Yeah.
So it's part and parcel of the times. The times are not what we would call normal. The idea that you could live in the world being presented by the propagandist from the television strikes me as a little precarious, you know.
Oh, absolutely. It seems like it's just barely holding on to its ability to even function as a, you know, it's just so out of touch that it seems that it's going to collapse real soon. And of course, if there's a financial collapse, then all those companies will be thinking twice about advertising on television, programming will be cut, and blah, blah, blah.
Well, and then you have electricity issues and hyperinflation.
Right.
The hyperinflation will be the death knell for the social infrastructure. And that'll hit on levels, as you say, in advertising, but also such things as the importation of oil for diesel, for driving trains to haul coal in order to make electricity, so the electrical grid suffers. We're already having a collapse of the food supplies at the oceanic level. Pretty soon that collapse will hit us at the grain level. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's kind of like I say, back to it local again. You know, if you like bread, maybe you need to figure out a way to store the stuff. If you actually look at it, you can store wheat berries from which flour can be made. Those can store for 10 years and still maintain their nutritional value without a whole lot of work. And then if you wanted to go to the work of shoving nitrogen into a sealed bucket of the grain, you can store them nutritionally for maybe 15 years without a whole lot of work. Whereas you can't really store flour. You know, flour goes bad.
It does go bad, yeah.
Yeah, and so you start reappraising your whole idea of what's sustainable and what isn't, because you've got to get through the hard times. And then there's the issue of sustainability on the other side of that. So how can I provide, you know, in the sense of, you know, growing vegetables to be able to provide the vitamins I need under the circumstances? And then, of course, there's the weird issues that our parents never had to deal with. It's like, are chemtrails good for my garden? Should I allow my broccoli to be covered by that stuff? I don't think so. Which means you're now going to start having, you know, container gardens in your own backyard, but they're reversed because they're containers to keep stuff out.
Right, right.
And that's what I've done. I've got a bunch of cold frames that, you know, are built with local lumber and plastic tops, and then I've got my grow dome, and basically it's so I don't have to worry about the food I'm going to consume being polluted.
I'm considering doing the same thing because there are times, not always, but there are times when my lungs just start hacking until I feel like I'm going to turn inside out.
Yeah.
And I attribute that directly to the atmosphere above falling.
Well, and it's barium and aluminum and other material, cadmium, 101 parts per million in Phoenix, cadmium, you shouldn't breathe it at 1 part per million.
Right, right.
And, you know, and it's all these heavy metals stay in your system. Now you have to start learning to breathe deeply, periodically.
Right.
I would recommend that people are interested in this, go look up PACE, P-A-C-E. It's a progressive cardio program developed by this Dr. Spears. The mechanisms involved are very akin to what are practiced in the martial arts. And so it's these heart and lung strengthening exercises that basically help you breathe in the lower abdomen, which helps you shed all these heavy metals. Not that aluminum is particularly heavy, but cadmium and barium certainly are. And aluminum, of course, is associated with Alzheimer's.
Oh, well.
or dementia in general. Yeah, okay, so the world is quite strange, and reaction to it anymore. It's like there's actually this thing in the whole science of yoga that's kind of cool. The book goes along and it says, it's warning you, and it's kind of doing its little Yoda thing saying, now watch out, there are these various traps when you're set off on the path of enlightenment. And one of the traps is that you'll be walking along and you'll slip back into what's known as the doshas or humor or view of the world that you used to have. In other words, you're walking along, everything's fine. And you think, why was I, I must have been really crazy to think that this New World Order and all of that business. And then it's like, oh, oops, wait a second, what's that up in the sky? Oh, yeah, that's right, the biggest conspiracy on the planet and right in front of my face. Yeah, all that other stuff is true, better get back to it, you know.
Yeah. Very good. Well, Cliff, we've come to the end of an hour, and it's just, boy, I always love talking to you. You are just so great. You've got
it. Yeah, I can sling the BS with the best of them. But it's great talking to you, Guy. It's very, very, very nice, very pleasant.
It's a lot of fun, and you always bring some wisdom to it and a little levity, too, which I like. Would you tell people how they can get your report? I highly recommend it because it's inexpensive, and it is 50 pages of extremely interesting and disturbing information.
Very disturbing stuff, yeah. But you can go to halfbasthuman.com and click on the Buy Now button and buy it, or you can mail us a check. But if you send a check, be sure and send an email address with it, or we'll get very, very irritated. Because then we have to track you down, you know.
And you won't get any pie.
That's correct, yeah. No pie for you.
All right. Well, I thank you very much, Cliff, and I can't wait to have you back again because you're always so much fun.
Sure, we'll do this in a little bit here. I've got to get to work on the next series of reports, and I'll be, head down for a while. But when I pop it up again like a meerkat, I'll see if I can find you.
All right, and I'll be watching for you on some of the other radio shows because they're all you're just doing. I love listening to you on all of them. So, of course,
thanks much. Like I say, I sure don't understand it. You need to find something better to do.
But I know. I'm going to get returned to writing another book. So,
There you go.
Yeah, you won't be hearing from me as much then.
Okay, cool.
All right, Cliff, thanks a million, and best of luck with that project, and keep in touch.
Okay, we'll talk to you. Bye.
All righty. Good night, everybody.